Over the course of the retreat so far, we've been working our way through the progressive practices that are laid out in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Satipatthana Sutta. And yesterday we started exploring the third foundation, which is mindfulness of the mind. So this morning I'd like to move on just really to touch into some aspects of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of dhammas. And this word dhammas is usually left untranslated because it's yet another of those Pali words, like dukkha, that covers a whole range of different meanings depending on context. But in this category, the translation of dhammas that makes most sense to me is categories of experience. So when we look at this fourth foundation, we see that it includes basically about seven different lists, numbered lists of the Buddha's teachings. For example, the five hindrances, the seven factors of awakening, and the four noble truths, which most of you have heard of. There's a pretty much all of the Buddha's teachings are covered under this fourth foundation of mindfulness. So I'm not going to have time to go into it in too much detail. But what I'd like to highlight is that there's a shift of emphasis in this fourth foundation compared to the previous three. So with mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of Vedana or feeling tone, and mindfulness of the mind, the basic instructions are simply to know our experience exactly as it is, without getting involved in it in any way, without changing it. For example, just knowing pleasant feeling tone, unpleasant feeling tone, neutral feeling tone, knowing that there's greed in the mind or not. Simply knowing. When we come to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, though, we are invited to get more involved with our experience and, if appropriate, to actually try and change it. So, for example, with the five hindrances that I just mentioned, these are different types of afflictive mental states that get in the way of clear seeing. Not only that, but they can lead to harm for ourselves and for others too. So the Buddha is reported to have said that these five hindrances overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment. So when we become aware, if one or more of these hindrances is present, we want to help them to release. And then on the other side of the scale, with lists such as the seven factors of awakening, these are beneficial mental states that do support insight. So if we become aware that one or more of these is present, we want them to stay around. We want to help them strengthen and deepen. And this more active engagement with our experience requires quite a lot of skill to find the right balance. Because if we get too involved in micromanaging everything, we'll interfere with the natural process of ripening and deepening. But if we take a too relaxed approach, it's easy to be overcome by the hindrances or to miss out on making the most of the awakening factors when they do come into play. So with this fourth foundation of mindfulness, today I'll be focusing mostly on just the five hindrances and a little bit on the seven factors of awakening. Because there's a relationship between these two sets of qualities. Namely, that as the hindrances become less predominant, there's more space in the mind for the awakening factors to arise. And the opposite too, when the awakening factors are present, the hindrances can't get in. So to some extent, this process of releasing the hindrances and developing the awakening factors happens quite naturally when we surrender into the silence and the stillness, the solitude and the simplicity that I talked about the other night. These are very powerful supports that help the mind to become calm and quiet and still. So one analogy for this process is a bit like the process of muddy water becoming clear. If we have a jar of muddy pond water and we keep giving it a shake every few minutes, then it's going to stay cloudy. But if we set it aside and leave it alone, then over time, the sediment just naturally settles to the bottom and we get pure, clear water. So similarly, on retreat, we try to avoid agitating the mind by getting involved in unnecessary distractions. We minimize our interactions with other people and we move more slowly, because the physical actions of the body have a very powerful effect on the mind too. So with this support of silence and slowness and simplicity, the mind naturally settles into deeper samadhi, the unity of mind that's sometimes known as concentration. And this undistracted mind provides the best conditions for the deepest insights to arise. So you might have noticed that each of you is much more settled now than when you first arrived a few days ago. And as the more grosser levels of agitation settle down and the mind becomes more still, then we start to see the more subtle levels of agitation more clearly. And in this fourth foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha highlighted 5 specific types of agitation. And these are the 5 hindrances. They're the unhelpful mental states that obscure our capacity to see clearly. So we really need to recognize when they're present and how to help them release. And this process of recognizing the hindrances builds on the practice that we started yesterday with the third foundation, mindfulness of the mind. And here, to begin with, we were simply knowing the presence or the absence of greed and hatred and delusion. And as you probably noticed, when we start to pay attention very directly to the mind, to our thoughts and emotions and moods and mind states, we often start to notice a few familiar ones. Perhaps you found yourself going over the same thoughts, rehashing the same old story over and over and over. Or at other times getting caught in specific emotions, perhaps anger or anxiety or boredom. Or maybe waking up in some kind of mood that seemed to last for quite a few hours. Resistance perhaps, just wanting to be somewhere else, anywhere but here and now. Or perhaps on the more positive side of the balance, perhaps mind states of alertness or curiosity. Gratitude, ease, lightness, acceptance, equanimity, some of those beautiful qualities of heart and mind that we were naming out loud together last night. So as the mindfulness of mind gets stronger, we start to notice particular patterns of mental activity, some that agitate the mind and some that calm it. And when we do recognize some kind of agitation in the mind, it's worth stopping to check which of the 5 hindrances it might be, so we can understand how to deal with it skillfully. So to begin with, I'll just name the 5 hindrances very briefly. And even if you have never heard of these hindrances or thought of your practice in these terms, when you listen to the list, you'll probably recognize at least one of them. Perhaps all 5. So as you hear them, you might like to check which, if any of them, sound quite familiar, perhaps even a present right now to some extent. So the first one is sensual desire. Any kind of wanting in the mind for sense pleasure. The second is ill will or aversion. Any kind of not wanting. This includes anger and fear. The third is sloth and torpor, dullness of the body and the stiffness of the mind. The fourth is restlessness and worry. And the fifth is skeptical doubt. So this desire for sense pleasure refers to any kind of wanting for pleasant sights, sounds, smells, tastes, physical sensations or mental activity, thoughts and emotions. And on retreat, where other than the food there isn't always a lot of sense pleasure to be had, sometimes we notice just how much we get involved in mental sense pleasures, all kinds of stories and projects and fantasies and perhaps even imaginary relationships, the so-called Vipassana romance, which usually dissolves the minute we break silence and hear the other person speak for the first time. Sounds like perhaps some of you recognize that one. So just to notice when the mind is playing out different kinds of desires, this is an aspect of the hindrance of desire for sense pleasure. And then aversion or ill will, all of these cover a whole spectrum of intensity. So from, as I said the other night, from intense rage or fear just through to the slightest trace of not wanting, of resistance. And this hindrance is usually a bit easier to recognize because it's unpleasant. Unlike sense desire, which can be experienced as pleasant, at least on a surface level, aversion or ill will is pretty consistently unpleasant. So we can feel directly that it is harmful, and there's more incentive to let it go. Sloth and torpor are different ways that the energy becomes not enough energy. So sleepiness, dullness, as I said, the animal known as the sloth that is almost stagnant because it's so slow. And this hindrance is very common on the first few days of a retreat. Low energy in the body and the mind. So one antidote in the whole that I haven't mentioned, but some of you have been doing already, is at any time, if we're feeling really caught by sloth and torpor, you can simply stand. And this act of standing raises the energy. And just the little bit of extra energy that's required to keep our balance while we're standing helps refresh the whole system. And then restlessness and worry is an imbalance of energy in the other direction. So there's too much energy in the body and mind. The body feels jumpy, the mind won't settle, and we want to change our position every few minutes. And the mind gets reactive, it spins out in anxiety and worry and a lot of future thinking and trying to work out whether we're doing it right and that kind of thing. So the antidote here is to consciously try and cultivate calm. So sometimes we might use mindfulness of breathing in the way that I mentioned on the first day, of just that bare knowing of rising and falling, like the surfer on the surfboard waiting for the wave. This can help still the body and mind. In the Satipatthana Sutta, one of the refrains talks about calming the bodily formations as we breathe in and as we breathe out. So sometimes as you breathe out, you might even drop in the word calm, just as a cue to invite the body, the heart, and the mind to settle. So it might be breathing in, breathing out, inviting calm. And you might experiment with that if at some point the mind is very agitated or the body's very agitated. And then this fifth hindrance of skeptical doubt, it's distinguished from investigative questioning, which is actually a skillful quality. Skeptical doubt is more that kind of undermining, second-guessing, constant questioning. Am I doing it right? What am I supposed to do now? Should I do metta? Should I walk? Should I go for a run? It can get caught up in what one friend of mine calls paralysis by analysis. And it stops us from actually doing anything. And this hindrance can be surprisingly seductive. It can play out as doubt in ourselves, doubt in the teachings, doubt in the teacher. And we find ourselves asking, well, what's the point really anyway? What good is this doing me sitting here? It would have been much better just to have taken a nice holiday somewhere, then I could have really relaxed. Before we know it, our mind's kind of halfway out the door, planning our next holiday. So of all of them, this hindrance is the hardest one to really catch. And if you do start to realize it's a pattern for you, really learning to recognize the signature statements of that doubt takes a bit of refinement, but once you learn to recognize them, as with all of these hindrances, the quicker we can recognize them, the easier it is to let them go. But if they go unnoticed, they have a way of building away in the background and becoming more entrenched, more solid. So the first stage really is just to recognize them. And as best we can, to recognize them with bare awareness, as we have been doing with everything else, which means not taking them personally. And this is quite a challenge because the usual tendency is to associate so-called bad meditation experiences with me as a meditator. So when the hindrances come up, there's something I've done wrong, there's something wrong with my practice. And even the word hindrance, it sounds, oh, we've got to get rid of it. So I've appreciated the English Dharma teacher Rob Berbea, his framing of these hindrances as manifestations of our humanity. And you might hear there's a very different relationship in that phrase than when we hear hindrances. So sometimes when I offer this, and then people will come to me in the individual meetings and say, I have been manifesting so much humanity this morning. And you can hear how it just shifts the relationship to that experience. So that's really what we're looking for, this capacity to have a sense of humor, to have lightness, to not take these things personally, because every human being alive experiences these hindrances, including the Buddha before he became fully awakened. So when we can relate to these hindrances in a skillful way, they become very powerful opportunities to deepen our practice. So this morning in the guided meditation, I'm going to offer us an opportunity to start just noticing what's happening in the mind and to see if one or more of these hindrances might be present, or if they're not, perhaps some skillful qualities. And I'll be using those three questions that I mentioned briefly the other day of just knowing what's happening in the body, what's happening in the heart mind, and how am I relating to this experience, or what's the attitude in the mind. So we're taking a kind of brief snapshot in the moment of our physical and mental experience, but then also knowing how am I relating to this. Because that third question is what often reveals the presence or absence of the hindrances. Some kind of not wanting, some kind of wanting, some kind of agitation, some kind of dullness, or some kind of doubt, not really knowing. So the meditation will mostly be in silence, but from time to time, I'll just ring the bell once and invite you to take that snapshot. Ask yourself the three questions and notice which, if any of the hindrances are present, or if they're not present, what skillful states might be there instead. Yeah. I'll repeat them during the meditation, but what's happening in the body, what's happening in the mind, how am I relating to this experience? So again, just taking a moment to begin to settle into your meditation posture.